Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's Tuesday, November 1st, 2011, and that's 11-1-11. And I'm your host, Arielle Taylor, with my co-hosts, Lavendar and Sierra. Our special guest this evening is Gloria Amendola, who has just returned from Rennes-le-Château, France, and the Bloodline Mystery Tour she hosted with Renee Barnett, producer of Bloodline the Movie. As you may recall, after Renee was on our show talking about the Mary Magdalene Bloodline, many of our audience contacted Gloria and Renee and inquired about going along with them the next time they went. So this tour kind of planned itself, and Gloria and Renee went into action and made it happen. Gloria's passion on this topic will be obvious, and when she told me a little of the story, she really made the scenes come alive in my mind, and I'm sure you'll agree. If you are listening and were one of the lucky ones who joined her, please call in and share your experience. This was Gloria's 11th trip to Rennes-le-Château, and here she is on 11-1-11 to share it all with us. So we want to thank Tammy for hosting the switchboard, and although Purple Sage is needed elsewhere this evening, I'll try to check into the chat room from time to time for any questions you may have for Gloria. And just for tonight, if you type any questions for Gloria in all caps, I'll be less likely to miss them, and I'll have my hands full, but I'll do my best to cover all the bases. I won't really be participating in the chat, but I'll just do the best I can to see your questions if you can't call in. And Purple Sage will be back next week. If you can call in, the number is 917-889-8292. And then press 1 so we know you have something to say. You can also listen on your computer at blogtalkradio.com/starseed-radio-academy. And if you haven't yet, please click follow on our show page to help us promote the show. And remember to tell a friend. We are well past the 61,000 listens mark, so thanks to all of you for tuning in each week. On our main site, which is starseedhotline.com, we have a lot of vital information for Starseed in our Vault of Knowledge. The entire site is coded for Starseed activation, and we also have a support forum for Starseed at starseedhotline.ning.com. Plus, we're on iTunes if you'd like to download our shows to go. I'll introduce Gloria in just a minute, but first I'd like to let you know that if you want to contact us privately, the toll-free number for our website is 888-881-0881. Our Stage 1 Starseed confirmations are based on Lavendar's discovery of star markings in your natal astrological chart. And the Stage 2 session is a one-on-one phone consultation. You can find out if you have star markings and how they determine your natural state and rites of passage. And we now offer a Stage 4 service with Sierra for contactees and abductees. And she can tell you more about that later in the show. And then check out Sierra's World on our main site. Don't forget, if you have a birthday coming up, you should know when your 10 hours of power will occur by requesting your solar return timing. Your manifestational ability for the coming year is amplified 1,000-fold during those 10 hours. So make the most of it. And now I would like to introduce my co-hosts, Lavendar and Sierra. Good evening, ladies.
Good evening.
Lavendar here. I'm real excited to hear what Gloria has to say. Are you there, Sierra?
I sure am. Hello, ladies.
Hi. Well, we are just going to get right to it because we have a lot of people I know who are just itching to hear all about this trip. So we are going to bring Gloria Amendola on right now. Hello, Gloria.
Hello, ladies. How are you?
Oh, we're so happy that you can be here and share this wonderful experience with us.
It's one of, you know, Rennes Le Chateau, Mary Magdalene, Templars, Earth Energies. It doesn't get any better than that for me. It's just a subject of such passion.
Well, I could tell that when I spoke to you last about this. And when did you actually get back?
I actually got back very late on October 17th.
Uh-huh. So you were just filled up with it. I know we have some pictures that you sent of the area. And why don't you kind of start at the beginning and tell us some of the things that you told me about this trip that were just so incredible. Oh, and Renee is here too, so let's just bring her on right away, because I know that Renee doesn't have a lot of time tonight. She's a busy lady. So, Renee, you are on the air with Gloria.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, Renee.
I couldn't let it go by without at least saying hello and thank you to all you guys over there at Starseed. You got the word out for us, and we got some great people that came with us because of hearing about it on your show, and we made some wonderful new friends, and I know Gloria agrees with that 100%.
Oh, God, yeah.
It was great, and we had such a wonderful time, and I really just wanted to say hi to everyone. I'm, you know, everybody's busy, but I'm just tied up working on a television show right now. We're right in the middle of production working on Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura. So we are busy, busy, busy over here, but I wanted to say hello and thank you so, so much. And we had some wonderful emails from people who wanted to go but weren't able to make this trip and are hoping to make it in the future. I had one really nice lady get in hold of me, and she sent a crystal for me to plant over there. And then Gloria took it and put it inside the Mary Magdalene Tower. And I wrote her back, and she was so thrilled. And she's hoping to make it on the next one.
Oh, well, so that's right. That's right.
Yeah. Well, Renee, thank you so much. I know your schedule is really busy, especially since you've been gone out of the country. You've probably got just a ton of things. So we thank you so much.
Oh, yeah, I'm
paying
for it dearly now. But it was worth it, believe me. It was wonderful, and I just can't wait to get back again. And I'm going to let Gloria tell you all about it in her wonderful way that she has. And we had some very exciting experiences and saw some beautiful things and had some great time. So I'm going to bid you all adieu and au revoir, and I will talk with you soon, hopefully.
Thanks,
okay,
Renee.
Thank you
Have
so much.
Have a great
show.
I love you guys.
Love you, too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. Well, that was perfect timing there. And
perfect timing.
Yeah. Well, this whole thing from... I guess one of the last times that Renee was on, talking about her previous experiences in Rennes Le Chateau, and everybody was listening, and they emailed and said, "Ooh, we want to go. When are you going again?" And as you ladies said, the tour just kind of took on a life of its own, and because you really hadn't anything concrete planned, and it just happened. So. Why don't you just give us some of the things that you feel are the high spots and things that really had an effect on not only you but the people and just everything. We want to hear everything.
Sure, and you know, at any point, cut in and ask questions. I'll just jump in and say that because we had such a great group of people. I mean, people are generally are really excellent, but the energy as a group really just melded wonderfully. And I think that's why the tour organized itself, because I think spirit, the spirit of Magdalene, the land, the earth, the timing, the cosmological alignments, all of it just put together this amazing group of people. So what I found happening is that each day built on the next. And it was the experiences, we were so in the moment. Somehow we stuck to the itinerary and actually added things for people like Montségur and like a special walk with Henry Lincoln over to an amazing standing stone that overlooks Rennes Le Chateau. You know, a few things like that that we added in. We still really were basically able to do everything. And it was like each day the energy built on the next. and the next. By the time the end, I mean, we were just feeling, when we concluded the tour back in Rennes-le-Château, which is where we began, we were in the Church of Mary Magdalene, and the bliss that we were feeling was extraordinary. The energy, the telluric energy, the currents there, what comes up from the earth is so incredible. So there are so many layers and levels to the journey, from the Cathar castles that we climbed and got a sense of who these people were, to the Templars and their strategic locations. Like, every time you turned around and you saw something special, there was a Templar marking of some kind, to these amazing earth energies that just, there was one woman, I think she was from your community, Issa, who her and I were constantly earthing. We were taking off our shoes and, you know, we were getting our feet in the earth and we were feeling that vibe, and it was just amazing. It just felt so good. So we began, one of the pictures actually that I sent you of the two water, the water coming into a V.
Mm-hmm.
Remember last night that I sent that picture? I know it's available for your listeners to see. That is actually at a very interesting location. Henry Lincoln had taken Renee and I there a couple trips ago, and he says, you need to look at this. You need to pay attention to this water source, its proximity to this Templar church, which still exists to this day. There's no dispute about it, and it's in this tiny little village. So, it's about location. Because it wasn't a thriving, area. And, well, I mean, it could have been at their time, but it was very small. But yet you see this amazing church there. And you have the marks of where they would sharpen their swords and where they would ride in with their horses. Very, very interesting. But, you know, right now they finally got the money to begin an archaeological dig because they found a crypt underneath that church. And it's allegedly never been opened.
Wow.
It's kind of exciting because history tells us that the Templars were there. It's very close to Rennes-le-Château. It's really within just a few miles. It's all about locations and grids in that area. And now they're actually this tiny, tiny little village. It's hard for them. They've actually redone the church. It's been repainted and refurbished, and they're actually going into the crypt. It's kind of exciting because it's never, to anyone's knowledge, nobody has ever gone in from the church that we know of. So God knows what we're going to find, what they're going to find. Very exciting.
So this is a subterranean crypt,
yeah,
under the church?
Most of the, exactly. Most of the structures there, and especially with the Church of Mary Magdalene, and not just that one, but, you know, in Bloodline, in the film Bloodline, I don't know if you remember when Ben Hammett finds the small vellum parchment that we, you know, everyone thinks was in that baluster, in that part of the church that Saunière was excavating, that was put there by one of the priests before the French Revolution. That talks about the royal crypt, of which many people feel that Jesus and Mary Magdalene were buried in that place at some point in history. And so whether it's now, whether it was then and they were moved, which is more of my feeling, it still was considered a royal crypta. And there is this stone ribbon on the church in Rennes-le-Château in the exterior, which denotes people of great importance were buried there. Having said that, you know, we have all these other amazing little churches in the area, and it's really this whole Templar imprint and where they're located, and almost all of them had crypts or underground chambers.
So, and under this crypt, now you say they have just gotten permission for an archaeological excavation into this crypt?
No, they actually have begun it. Last year when we were there, Sandy Hamblett, who was also in Bloodline, who helped Ben decipher some of the clues and so forth, she had gone down there, and they said they were trying to organize the money to begin it. Now here we were a year later, and they've obviously made progress, and they had actually dug down in the back part where the Templars would ride in. They actually dug down. I know people took pictures of it. I'm not good with this, but maybe 20, 25 feet. So they're actually beginning to tunnel into the earth to where they think the access to this crypt is.
Wow, and there is no access from inside the church.
I don't think so, because I think they would be doing it that way. But, I mean, there might be architectural reasons why they would do it where they're doing it. But they're doing it at the part of the church that's Templar.
Uh-huh. Wow. And, I mean, the people that live around there, are they aware of this? Are they like stewards of the area, or are they just ignorant of where they live?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, because on one hand, when I'm there, it seems like some people are totally oblivious. Some people don't even seem to care. Some people just are living their lives, if you will. But then there are others. There are guardians. You don't see them. In a way, to me, they're kind of, in that part of the world, they seem to me a little more behind the scenes, if you will. And,
well, that
and
would make
they're,
sense.
Yeah, it because there's a history of some real danger in that area. So people, you know, they're different than Americans there. They're quieter about what they're doing. They're concerned at times about the Vatican's presence in the area and a couple of others. So they tend to do things more quietly.
No, that would totally make sense.
Yeah.
So you were talking about some of the I'm trying to remember the astronomical megalith.
The megalithic astronomy.
Okay.
That's
yes.
Okay. All right. Well, one thing we were talking about last night, I was saying that although my original, what drew me to Rennes-le-Château was, of course, Jesus and Mary Magdalene, both in what really happened, what's on the ground there, and also I believe they're my teachers in spirit, and they just kept guiding me to get there, to get there, to get there. So that's the doorway in which I went in. And Magdalene has always said to me in my meditation that if you follow me through this door, I'm going to show you a much bigger world, and I'm going to, you know, show you the mysteries. So I thought, wow, I'm not sure exactly what that means, but I'm saying yes and I'm going. And this being my 11th trip, it was really interesting for me to work out on the ground this vast megalithic astronomy that I believe that the ancient cultures, probably the megalithic peoples at that time, Druids, were employing on the landscape long before Jesus and Mary Magdalene were there. And it was it's such a holy place on the ground. It resonates with such math and such number and such sacred geometry and such vibration that I often wonder, is this what drew them to the area? Was it known by the masters and taught that this was one area of the world where heaven on earth come and meet and join and dance and play?
Like a sacred portal.
Exactly. That's what we were talking about. And, of course, and before I get into the megalithic astronomy, you know, where the Church of Mary Magdalene is situated in Rennes-le-Château, there are some who believe that a temple to the goddess, possibly Isis, was underneath there. But it is no denying the energy that is there. It is really, really extraordinary. And, you know, C.S. Lewis, Narnia, the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, there are people that believe that he was referring to the priest's wardrobe, Sonnier, and that they understood this portal in Rennes-le-Château. And Narnia, that story where the kids go through the closet, through the wardrobe to get to the other world, there's kind of a play on Rennes-le-Château there.
You know, it's amazing how much how much is revealed in supposedly, you know, fictional type movies and fantasy movies. You just kind of have to make the correlations like you have.
Well, even in the world of some of our founding fathers, we know that Benjamin Franklin, that elusive, very interesting character that he was, you know, a lot of the founders had spent time in France. And Benjamin Franklin was actually a Freemason in one of the commanderies was in Carcassonne, which is the big city about a half hour from Rennes-le-Château. It's a beautiful site. We went there as well. It's a UNESCO World Heritage Site, and it's a beautiful example of a medieval walled city. So we know that people have gone time and time again to Rennes Le Chateau for an understanding of the mysteries, but it's what the mysteries really are that we're really, I think, in this modern time beginning to put together. And that's where the whole megalithic astronomy comes in. So let me give you like a specific. There's a line through Rennes Le Chateau, which goes Rennes Le Chateau, Blanchefort, Arc. It's oriented, and we walked these places with the group. We walked along these roads, the roads of the Cathars, the lands of the Cathars, and it's oriented 72 degrees from true north. They call this line the Sunrise Line, and it can actually be extended both to the east and the west to precisely intersect additional structures. To the west, the line passes right through Campagna Sur Aude, which is that Templar church, which I said at the beginning, the very first day we were there, where the excavation is now going on. It goes right through there, right through Rennes Le Chateau, and right down the other way. And, of course, you have this little, you know, imprint of the Templars all along the way. And these alignments connected to megalithic astronomy. This line is not only oriented 72 degrees from true north, it aligns to other villages as well. So at the latitude of Rennes Le Chateau, the sun rises at a position of 72 degrees from true north on about August 15th. Now, we know August 15th in the Catholic Church is a day, and maybe other churches, is a day dedicated to the Mother Mary, right? This whole idea of Mary, the Virgo constellation. It is the day commemorating the day of the Assumption, and it's a big deal there, of the Virgin Mary into heaven. And here's where it gets really interesting. I think Lavendar is really going to like this. Here's where it gets interesting. On the date of August 15th, the sun sets and rises very near to the star Regulus. Regulus is a bright star, and it's prominent in the night sky. Regulus is located at one point of a right triangle, formed also by two other bright stars, Spica and Arcturus. This stellar right triangle is very conspicuous in the night sky, and it encloses the constellation Virgo. So here you have the Mother Mary, the Virgin. It's often associated with the constellation Virgo. You have August 15th. You have this light phenomenon that occurs. It emanates from Rennes Le Chateau right down this line, which you can walk, but it is a line of sight. And when you have this phenomenon going on, you have this perfect 30, 60, 90 degree triangle of stellar alignments that's exactly mirrored on the ground in Rennes Le Chateau, in the
wow.
area.
Wow.
I mean, think about the knowledge that it took to do that.
Well, I'm sure that they had celestial help, because adding into that equation, as I'm sure Lavendar is doing, that not only all of those astronomical things that you just said, August 15th is the beginning of the 3-day window when the sun is at galactic degree in Leo, which is obviously a galactic royalty kind of vibe. Yeah. So you have the Royal Virgin. That's how I translate it.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, most of our audience is familiar with Lavendar's discovery of star markings, but just in case you're one of the few people out there that haven't heard about it, but every month between the 15th and the 20th, the sun reaches the galactic degree, and that is the cosmic window for extraterrestrial interplay and interaction on this planet. So, yeah, when you say I'm adding it all up because of the date at that when the sun is at that point of galactic royalty. And then you have the triangle around, you know, the Virgin Virgo constellation. That spells Royal Virgin to me.
So get this. Let's just for your listeners to, because I know this is, it's abstract at first, but it becomes, once you see it, it doesn't go away. So at the latitude of Rennes Le Château, the sunrise line pointing to the stellar triangle, that 30, 60, 90, Spica, Arcturus, Regulus, and to Virgo, you know, the Virgin, Virgo, hits the horizon at a position 72 degrees away from true north. Now, maybe Lavendar can help with this, because this one sentence bugs me because I don't fully get it. Once again, an angle of 72 degrees is required to construct a star.
Okay. Now, are you talking about a graphic type of star or a real star?
Well, the author who I do need to contact, I've actually spoken to him, he doesn't elaborate. And I thought, oh, my God, that's one of the things, like in the Bible, they say something crazy, and then they never tell you any, you never hear of it again. But what they're saying, and what I found interesting in connection to what you're saying, at the latitude of Rennes, the sunrise line, you know, highlights the stellar triangle. Maybe it's holding somehow, reflecting those energies, maybe taking in those energies, maybe it's star mapping, I don't know. And to the Virgo, so we have that whole correlation being made as well. And, I mean, what did the Catholic Church know that they actually created the day for Mary on this date of August 15th in alignment with this phenomenon? So it hits the horizon at a position 72 degrees away from true north, and he just says that an angle of 72 degrees is required to construct a star. And I don't know exactly what that means, but I do believe when you're on that sunrise line, there is an interplay of light that, this is my own theory because I've walked it and experienced it, that somehow there's an interplay of light that is not of this world. It's just something different. It defies our laws of physics, in my opinion, and there's just a light phenomenon that occurs that I actually believe, again, this is my own theory, that it somehow accelerates consciousness.
I'm looking at this through your eyes, and I can feel almost what you felt. And, I mean, the feeling of just, I mean, beyond joy. I mean, how did you keep from crying the whole time? Just being
I've cried many, many times. You know, sometimes out of just pure, you know, joy, and then sometimes out of just a bittersweet of the whole Magdalene journey. Like I expressed last night, when I climbed Peshkadu, which is another area that we, you know, made the connections and walked up towards, it's a high mountain to climb, so we didn't do it on this trip. But when I got to the very top, there was a medicine wheel, and there were four of us, and we each went off kind of into the different directions and had some solitary time. And I went into meditation, and I said to Magdalene, I asked her, why this place? I mean, it has obvious beauty. There's something very special here, but why this place? I mean, there are other places of great beauty on the earth. So, and she said, because this is where I ascended. And that, in addition to some other things, just made me wonder, because she's always kind of pointing me into the direction of, pay attention to the way the light works in this place, because it's something very different. So I'm not saying I have all the answers, and I'm not saying my theories are right, but based on what I have experienced there, it has transformed me as a person and what my brain power is able to understand. And so, I do believe that there's something there. And, of course, I'll just keep going and keep jumping in until it makes sense to me.
Well, I know, I mean, there's certain things that you say that just send chills immediately from head to toe in a flash. And to me, that's a confirmation that I'm hearing, the truth. And, you know, when you said, because this is where I ascended, I mean, I can't tell you. My whole body went, yeah.
Well, and it's interesting. No, go ahead.
I was going to say that when a major energetic event like that happens, the entire the rocks, the trees, the ground itself holds that residual energy,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't go away when it's. I mean, certainly energy of that power and that strength and that importance.
It doesn't go away. I think it amplifies. And you know, one of the things in the area that I always like to highlight on the tour that's important to me, and this group particularly enjoyed it, or what I call the living water. So when you say the trees and the rocks, you know, they hold that resonant frequency, that vibration, that memory. Well, we know that water holds tremendous memory. And the water there is so full of life force, it's incredible. It's pristine, it's clean, it's drinkable, but it's healing. So we would go, our group stayed at Hotel La Vache in Alette-les-Bains, another place of the waters of the Aude River, and they have a bottling station where they actually bottle their water to sell in France at that location, but they let all the locals or whomever come and you know, fill your water bottle. So almost every day or sometimes twice a day we were there, we were in the little bath part of that, and we were drinking the water. And I think it's such an important component to when people come, because I do think it helps to awaken whatever memories it is, whatever memories are important for them, you know, because for everyone it's different. But drinking of the water is holding the energy and the memory of that place too.
Oh, absolutely. And are there actually baths where you can, you know, get in the water?
There are. In Rennes-les-Bains, there are public baths, which are, you know, you go into a pool and you can swim like that. And, you know, I'm not sure exactly how they work that out in terms of if there's any chemicals in the pool, because I don't go in there. What we do is we walk down by the river and we go to the ruins of the Roman baths. You know, the ruins are still there. And the water trickles down, and it's naturally heated, and it has some wonderful healing elements to the water. People have been taking the waters there for a very long time. Now, this is natural, and what you do is you basically follow it, and then there's a point where you just kind of take your shoes off, and you get in the water, and you walk. And there's this natural jacuzzi, if you will, that people probably locally constructed. And you can sit in it, and there's a bar to hold on to because it gets a little slippery with the moss. And the waters just pour, and you can just be right under that waterfall or sit in the waters. And that's not regulated. You know, it's just you go, and we did that. And it was amazing.
How many people did you have with you?
We had 8 people with us, and then, of course, there was Renee, there was me, there was Ben, Sandy, so it was a nice group.
Well, were there any experiences of others that you can, you know, without naming names, as you watch people's reaction, especially people that are there for the first time, can you describe possibly your observance of this effect on people who are there for the first time? Things that you observed doing?
Yeah, I saw, I'll be specific, this one morning, I was mentioning this last night, this one morning we were going to head out to this place called the Gorge de Gallimousse, which is this phenomenal gorge and carved, things like you see in Tibet, but carved into this gorge is this chapel and this idea that there are entrances in there to the other world and that Magdalene taught there. But we couldn't get into the chapel part that day. It was closed, just randomly closed. So we took the view and we looked at it. And but before we did that, we had tried to get into this little tiny Templar chapel on the way and right on the Paris Meridian, location, location, location. And we weren't able to get in the day we tried. So we went back on the morning we were heading to the gorge because it was right along the way. And so we end up in this tiny little chapel, like a one-room, very, very, very old, nothing fancy there. And there was this woman singing at the altar in her jeans and her down vest, you know, really simply dressed. And she was like an angel. And she was singing songs. I mean, it was extraordinarily beautiful. And there were a handful of people who sat in the church for quite some time and just listened and cried. And later on, I asked one of the people who had come from your group why, you know, because sometimes you never know why someone is crying, what they're connecting to, a memory, and it could be a difficult memory, it could be an amazing memory, and sometimes people don't know. So there was, in that moment, there were a lot of tears, like that sound, that resonance, that acoustical perfection in this tiny little building, and the fact that the universe just provided this beautiful spirit to sing, and she just kept singing, was something that brought many people to tears. Just tears. I mean, it was just an amazing experience.
I know. There's something so angelic, and from the way you had described her, she was just... she just happened to be there, and the place just happened to be open when the day before it was closed. And,
yeah, it's a really hard church to get into. Oh, my God, it's almost impossible.
And the perfect acoustics, and that can be a very deeply spiritually moving experience in of itself, and then you put it in that location. I mean,
you put it in the location of water running right there, and you put it in the location of the Paris Meridian, so you're right on an energy line, and it is an extraordinary experience. And again, you have this Templar imprint because they procured the space and had this little chapel purchased, but it was interesting to watch reactions of some people. And you know, that was just one very poignant moment. There were other moments when people were climbing the Cathar castles and walking some of the paths of the Cathars that were very emotional for them. It just, whatever they were connecting to, they knew they could share if they wanted to, but sometimes people need their privacy. But I found those to be very moving moments for people.
Well, I'm sure that, especially, like I said, being there for the first time, if you can imagine, you know, remember your first time there, and it just must hit them and hit their DNA, and it can activate so many long-forgotten memories and emotions and records, you know,
Absolutely, and... You know, there's a guy out there called, his name is Dan Winter, and he's done some amazing work on the energies of the earth there, and if your DNA is aligned to that particular area, how this Grail code wakes up your DNA, how it purifies your blood, whatever process we want to talk about. Of course, for me, it's, you know, the blood mysteries and, you know, how that interacts with the fluid, the water in our body, if you will, and the light. And he just has some amazing work out there. And I've seen it happen to people over and over again on the ground, and some people more than others. Case in point, one of the women who came on the tour with us, a younger woman, someone who has studied with me in Circle for years, and she's just incredibly focused for her age. I mean, she is just tenacious when it comes to this information. So she finally found herself there. She was over at my house today dropping off a copied pamphlet on Montsegura that she made me, which is a famous Cathar castle that we went to. And she said, I just can't go back to work. I can't do it anymore. I need to shift my life. Something happened to me there, and I'm not the same, and I don't want to be the same.
Wow. Yeah. I can imagine it's just like a quantum leap.
Yeah.
In knowing when certain things, when you get in contact, I mean, and this goes generally in saying, whatever blood codes you have in your DNA codes, I should say, you have in your blood, when you get to an area that is connected to those genetics, they just start going off. And there are so many people that we see now, you know, in the course of doing our charts and everything, and we see the markings, the astrological markings that are in alignment with the Jesus and Mary Magdalene story and bloodline. But you get in an area where they walked, and especially in that area, I could just see it's like I'm imagining, you know, throwing that big switch when all the lights come on, and you thought that, you know, you thought it was daylight, and then you realize that it had always been dark until the lights went on.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. In the idea of walking in their steps, it's funny you should say that, because I think some people, you know, do feel that, and they feel the Magdalene. But I have to tell you, there are places there where I feel the energy of Yeshua, unmistakable. There is, in the Church of Rennes Le Chateau, there is this fresco on the west wall that is, Ben Hammett has dubbed the Fleury tableau. It's connected to some local landowners and perhaps bloodline families. But there's this very curious, I guess it would be called a relief, where Jesus is on the top of the hill, and Mary Magdalene is to his side a little bit further down this hill, and I think she has the tears, and there are others. And then there is this sack of gold. Well, I say gold. I don't even know why I said that. There's a sack that's tied, and everything means something. Sonier, you know, he put this there for a reason. And there is a hill in the area that matches that in the west wall of Mary Magdalene's church in Rennes Le Chateau. And when I have hiked over there, and it's on the way to the Cave of the Magdalene where Ben Hammett found the chest with the relics in there, or the artifacts, there is a hill. And every time I'm on it, I swear to God, in my inner truth, I can feel the energy of Jesus there. Like, I just know it like the back of my hand. You know, I just know it. It resonates deeply with me. So whether Sonier was trying to tell us that Jesus was actually there or not, I don't really know. I have my ideas. But when I walk it, oh, my God, my body goes crazy.
Well, because of your alignment to the story and obviously your own soul's records, you're like a Geiger counter, like a metal detector.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You get over a matching frequency and your whole body goes off. And that's really all you need to know. You know, like Lavendar says, truth knows its own source.
Yes.
So, yes. Oh, that's incredible. Now, you were talking about when I spoke to you the other night, a land formation that's, someone, I'm not recalling what you said, but it was something about Atlantis.
Ah, this is a good one. This is a good one. And we went here with the group. On that, remember earlier I was talking about the light phenomenon on the Sunrise Line on August 15th? Well, that area, when you walk it, are you familiar with Poussin's painting, Shepherds of Arcadia?
That was in the movie, wasn't it?
Yeah, very key to the mystery, and there is an actual location, and we walk through Les Pontils. It's just a tiny little village along the way from Rennes-le-Château to Arc, if you will, and on this line. And so this tomb once existed there, and so we do walk to see where it was. And I could go off just on a story about that. So we're with the group, and we're walking, and then we go up the slight incline to this standing stone, another standing stone in the area. There is an entire megalithic overlay in that area. And it's so deliberately placed. So we walk from the Poussin tomb, and we go up this little hill, and not too far up, we're at the standing stone. And Ben Hammett, who's probably been to Rennes 60 times, He says in this beautiful area, which is connected to where I believe the repository and the tomb they talk about in Bloodline is located, he has our eyes go across the valley, across the road and across the valley, and there's this V shape. And it, you have to get go across private property to get to it, and so that's another story. But you can see it as a panoramic view. And he said the locals call this, and it's in this V shape, the Gates of Atlantis. Well, when I heard that, I went crazy because above and beyond the Magdalene and Jesus story, I have always felt since my second trip to the area that there was something very Atlantean about this area of France, of southern France. So we were talking about that last night. Mm-hmm. And the more you go up into the landscape, the more you can, because you go way uphill in the back. There's a Templar quarry back there, which we took the group to. And we all got samples of rose marble, which was really fun. It's beautiful. We could see exactly how the Standing Stone split that canyon in half.
Wow. Like you said, it was put there in that particular place quite deliberately as either a marker, an energy anchor, or a clue, or all three.
Mm-hmm. I know. It's very exciting because it's so deliberately placed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they didn't drag a stone of that weight to a particular location just because. You know, they had a very specific reason for doing so.
That's all part of the tapestry of the mystery. For those who may not have heard our show last week on Atlantis, this just ties in so perfectly with the story. And I'll just recap very briefly for in case anyone hasn't heard last week's show. That in the time when Atlantis destruction was inevitable, they knew it was coming. The elders, the stewards, the scribe of Atlantis had written down all the records and knowledge of Atlantis and made copies and. One of those copies, I mean, they were sent all over the world and buried in sacred places, but one of those places and probably a predominant location in Lavendar's story is right there in the south of France, where the Atlanteans knew about the special attributes of that area. And we're going back 12,000 years that they knew of those which also means now that I'm talking out loud about it that it hasn't changed. It was like that 12,000 years ago, probably more, and it's still like that. It's a natural permanent characteristic of that area. So the book of knowledge is hidden. Of Atlantis is hidden in that area, in the south of France.
I think it's actually encoded in the area, and I think it's encoded in the landscape. It could be written in a manuscript as well, but I think in the Priory of Sion, if you believe they exist, and I do in some form, whatever name they could go by, they allude to it being more encoded in the area. It's a possibility.
Right.
And what I find interesting, and we were talking about last night, Rob Howells, who was in Bloodline, who goes with Bruce to meet Nick Haywood, and though that interview is, you know, cut in and out of the entire film, you know, they go to it, they keep returning to it. Well, his book just came out. Watkins in London published it, and it is a fascinating book. I highly recommend it to your listeners. It's called Inside the Priory of Sion by Robert Howells, Howells. You can get it on Amazon. And he ties in the Jesus and Mary story, what the Priory of Sion believes, what they believe has been protected, what's encoded in the earth, and how this connects to the apocalypse, which they mean the revelation. So whether you believe the apocalypse or revelation is 2012 or sometime further out, you know, I mean, everybody's got their ideas, and I'm not exactly sure. But they say that at that time, there's something about that area that is a safe place. And for me, the connection to Atlantis is interesting because I independently confirmed this with someone I know who works on the grids globally, very, very sophisticated private work that these groups are doing in terms of the ascension and the grids. And he confirmed independently to me that the reason why Rennes-le-Château is a safe place is because it has something to do with its location or proximity to the Giza Plateau and to Atlantis. There's just something there. And again, I go back to it being encoded in the numbers, in the math, in the angles of which things happen in that place, you know, astronomically.
Mm-hmm.
And geographically. That somehow, I mean, who designed this? I don't know. Do I think Jesus and Mary Magdalene knew about this? Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And as Lavendar said on the show last week, that she highly suspects anyway that this knowledge was encoded in quartz crystal and buried
mm-hmm.
there. Not that it would be a, you know, an actual, you know, book with pages, that it would, because that's just the way the Atlanteans did thing, and they saved their records, encoded them in crystals, just like a computer hard drive.
Absolutely.
Know, you save it
and, you know,
and you bury it.
It's funny you say that, because when I got back from Rennes, I was preparing to do Renee's show. We were going to talk about, you know, the tour and different things. And a friend of mine here in Connecticut who I would consider a master with gems and stones and crystals has done some amazing work. She sent me she actually called me and said, I'm reading this book, and I just want you to know this author is suggesting that the 13th skull, or this master skull of the crystal skulls, is buried right near Rennes-le-Château. Did you ever hear that? And I'm like, oh, my God, no. But that makes sense, because it just feels like there's something like that there. So I have exact coordinates, and I've spoken to Ben Hammett already, so when we get back there, it's one of the first places I'm going to go to on the ground and see what's there. You know, what does it feel like? What's there? What's going on? It's not a place I've ever heard of, so it could just be one of those tiny, tiny little villages that you might drive in and out of in, you know, 1 minute. You don't even know it's there.
Mm-hmm. Right. Resting peacefully and just awaiting this, you know, moment in time when here we are, like I said, 12,000 years later, and as a species, as a civilization, we're finally getting to a point where we are ascending, which is simply to say our consciousness is rising, and when enough of us, like Starseed, maintain a unity at this high frequency of consciousness, then I really feel that many of these secrets will be revealed, because, you know,
we will have proven our responsibility.
Right. It's like the kids are old enough now to hear about this. They were just kids before. But, you know, when you're coming of age, it's part of the rites of passage to have, you know, more understanding. And I get the feeling that just to call this a holy place is really too minimal of a description. You know?
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I absolutely agree. I think I have yet to come up with a description, but I know that I can't wait to be there again, and I can't wait to be plugged into the earth there and to connect. And actually, Renee and I have been talking about our tours in 2012 there. And the one aspect that I'm working on that I haven't really talked about yet is the sun and moon conjunction there. that takes place in Rennes-le-Château. Most people don't talk about this stuff, and that's okay. You know, there's other levels of the story, and they're relevant. But if you were talking about the veneration of a holy place over a long period of time, you know, this far supersedes the Saunière story, although the priest Saunière encoded something very important for us. But this is just something of a different magnitude and scope. And there is something about the sun and moon conjunction in Rennes-le-Château that happens at a certain time of year that is very unique to place. It's very unique to that place. And ancient people who understood not only megalithic astronomy, but what I would call megalithic alchemy, would know that this was a very special alignment, and it would have brought people there to, much like the Glastonbury Tour, to as a place of veneration. So I'm looking to connect that up with the Venus component to try and get really clear on what exactly is going on, because I believe in the energies of next year, it's going to be wild.
Oh, yeah. And is there a specific day that this conjunction would take place, or is it a different day of each year, or is it always on the same day?
Well, no, it's not on the same day. It's on the same alignment. It's around the same day. And I will say, I'm going to keep a little bit of it to myself at the moment till I flesh it out more, but it's definitely connected to the summer solstice.
So I would say that I would be really interested in looking at the astrological codes of that, because I have no doubt that there will be a correlation. And when you're ready to look for some more pieces and you have the information, Lavendar and I would be happy to take a look at
that
particular. Because remember when when you're talking about that 72 degrees off north
mm-hmm.
on August 15th and all this happened, August 15th to us as, starseed, star marking, I don't want to say experts, but, I mean, Lavendar wrote the book, so I guess it doesn't get much more expert than that. It would just be very interesting to have that piece of the puzzle to see what star markings were existing, because certain star markings hold a vibration that is particular just to that combination.
So we need to do that, because mm-hmm. If you take the sun moon conjunction in terms of an internal process, and you both probably understand this more than I do because it connects, I think, more to astrology. Through the mirror of others, we meet the self, this most basic symbol of this sun-moon conjunction, this alignment. When we have the sun-moon conjunction on a certain day of the year, it here it is, it's happening on the landscape, right? It's heaven and earth, if you will. And then we have this conjunctio mysterium of alchemy, symbolize the conjunction of the sun and the moon. And then we have this possibility that we're going to the heart of the alchemy of opposites, transforming and transmuting those into a greater whole. So this is where I bring Mary Magdalene back in, as we come full circle to this understanding. When she said to me, I ascended in this place. My sense is that she performed the great work, that was done in the Egyptian mystery schools and by the great alchemists, that she was able to transcend duality consciousness and reconcile the opposites, which has always been the work of the alchemists and, and ancient Egyptians, to do this. And she was able to do that and go into a state of, to become an avatar.
And that brings us today. another piece. Today is Avatar Day.
Yeah.
November 1st and May 1st every year. And I was going to give a little bit later in the show, a definition of what that is, but I don't want to get off the point too much while you were talking, and I knew exactly where you were going, even though I hadn't heard this before, because the sun and the moon conjunct are the male-female polarities, and when they're conjunct, they're like there's a oneness and a unity there, you know, the transmutation of duality into unity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the sun and the moon conjunct at any time would ignite that energy. And certainly, Jesus and Mary Magdalene were the ultimate male and female union.
Mm-hmm.
And tracking it back even farther, for those who have been listening to our shows right along, this they're going to be already tying these ends together. But Atlantis was a Pleiadian project. And when it had run its course and run into the tragic flaw, so to speak, of the acceleration of technology, where when technology got ahead of their spiritual level, that's when the game was over, and it had to be destroyed. And they tried for centuries, probably millennia, to avoid that, but it couldn't be helped, so it had to be expunged, so to speak. And then, mm-hmm. So there was a Pleiadian experiment there, and then, going through the Greek and the Egyptian and all those civilizations, you get to 500 years before Jesus was born. The plan for his arrival was set into motion by the Pleiadians. And certainly, Mary Magdalene and Jesus were chosen by their peers and I don't know if you can call them advisors at that level, but, the custodial gods, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
They were chosen for that experiment, which kind of went a little sideways because it wasn't supposed to start a religion. It was supposed to show a way.
Exactly, awakening.
Right, so there's, Jesus and Mary. So they are related to Atlantis through their Pleiadian connection, and then we have southern France related to Atlantis because it was one of the places where the records were buried.
Oh, God, that makes sense to me.
So you just...
Would have known on a deeper level. That's, of course, how they would have known.
So if you keep going up the levels of the chessboard, so to speak, you can see that these are not all separate points in history.
No.
There's a cyclic thing to it, and really, the Pleiadians were not alone in these projects. There's the Federation, and there are many different species that helped and were part of the team, but the Pleiadians were kind of in charge. But it is all connected like that.
Let me throw this out to you and tell me, I'd like your opinion on it, because it's a place that I have visited in the Rennes-Château region, and I can't quite get a handle on it. But a few of our people in the group, when we were there at this little tiny Templar church along the way, and it's connected to the Pleiades, that's why I say this, had a very profound experience. When I said earlier that we went to the Gorge de Gaillemous and the chapel that's carved in stone there was just arbitrarily closed, we ended up between there and Bougarache, which was another location, Mount Bougarache, very mysterious place. We ended up going through this little tiny village. I mean, really, it's I can't even call it a village. And I knew from being with friends in the past, my Templar commanders, because I actually am a Templar in France, we had gone there for a variety, they showed it to me two or three times. So we pull into this little tiny village, and we had lunch. We had picked it up at a local deli, and, we were going to sit, and I knew of this picnic spot right by this little stream, and, there were some places for us to sit and at least take lunch. Well, when I was done, I walked over to the church, because I had to try to find someone in the town, in the village, to give me the key, because they don't leave them open. Well, lo and behold, the church was wide open, which I've never seen. So I'm like, thank you, God. You know, this is easy, and we're going to get to go in. Now, I know this is a Templar church from my Templar commander, and it is a triangular church, which you don't see that often.
No.
And when you go in this triangular church, and which has just been repainted, I don't think they're fully done yet, but they're refurbishing it as well, which is so wonderful to see. You go up to the altar area, and there's this cluster of stars. There are these stars painted on this blue background, but there is a cluster in that church. Now, again, my Templar commander, who lives in Rennes-le-Château, had told me a while ago that he believed that cluster was a representation of the Pleiades, and that this was a known Templar church. And I said, what do you think was going on there? Because, again, the acoustics were pretty good. And I'm like, what do you think in the middle of nowhere they were doing here? And he says, I suspect, and again, these are just theories and thoughts, and he's lived there for many years, so he's put a lot of pieces together. He said, I feel that there was there were initiations that took place here when they were at a certain, this chapel was in a certain alignment with the Pleiades or the space. And that's all he said, and it resonated. So we did get, and we did slip in there, and the whole group was really thrilled to be there. It was just a surprise, and it was another gift on that day. And a couple of people had very just experiences they couldn't explain there. And I just wonder if their Pleiadian codes were just buzzing.
Undoubtedly, because of the connection with the Pleiades, even factions of people who have to do with this story may not particularly have Pleiadian DNA, but like I said, this was not exclusive, a Pleiadian project, because there were many, many races, but when they come in contact with those codes, if they have any of that in their soul records, yeah, I mean, activation would be pretty intense.
Yeah. Oh, it was.
Pretty intense.
Sure.
And it would be very, very interesting to do like a chart on that day for that person in that place and see how it lined up with what they came in with. Interesting study.
The only thing that, when I'm in that moment and I see people, really resonating, what I do is I sing a lot. And we whoever wants to sing, we begin to sing these songs to the mother, usually. They're simple songs, nothing complicated. But it helps to bring, up that telluric energy or current in, as it's aligning with the stellar energies or, sky, spirit, however we see it, that heaven and earth conjunction, that moment of unification, we sing, and it's that resonance of singing and of sound that helps. And so that was a particularly interesting place for a few people. And again, it's always a surprise to me who gets triggered where, what I mean? Because it's different. It's different in every location and for every person. So anyway, that's kind of the, kind of the fun of it, like as a facilitator, to recognize that and of course to support it. But you just never know who will have that reaction.
Right, right. Well, even the people, like the codes can be dormant, just waiting for the match to be struck.
Yeah.
And you put them in the right place. And they have to certainly be at the right time in their lives, because I guess if they were 4 or 5 years old, that would not be the right time. So they'd have to come back later. But given the proper circumstances, when a person was awake and searching and certainly coming out as a light being, you put them in the right place, and then you add in, besides all the blood codes, past life energies,
they'd ever lived, if they'd ever lived in that area, which would be probably highly likely. As
we had
past lifetimes there.
Yeah. I've done a lot of regression work to work out some of the stuck emotion of some of the difficult ones, and you know, since I've worked on that, I can enjoy some of the more adventurous and pleasant experiences of being there. But very clearly, many lifetimes I've come across, and other people were coming across that as well. So that was it was just wonderful to watch. It was wonderful for them to call those pieces back home, if you will. You know, that fragmentation that we can sometimes go through, and them calling their pieces home and becoming more unified. We're multidimensional. Whatever it is in the end, it's how you feel. And I think people were feeling just, you know, really many things, but I think, you know, overall it was just an incredible feeling.
I'm sorry. When you said that, I just had the visual of a budded flower, and then all of the encasements around the flower, like the little green parts, like on a rosebud, they just kind of fall away. You know, meaning the trivialities of third dimensional life, they just fall away as the flower starts to bloom. And when you get this activation, you get a reassessment on what's real, what's important, and what really just doesn't matter. It's just a third dimensional trapping that you had somehow wrapped around yourself, and that just all gets shed like molting. That's just the visual I had when you were describing what happens to people.
I agree with that. And then for those who are really ready and open, or you know, they feel it's the right moment for them, what I really like playing with, what I've had to learn myself as well, is in this mystical marriage, if you will, that we undergo, we become very large energetically. Whether it's our light bodies or Merkaba, it's huge. It's like the story of Jesus, you know, on the Sermon on the Mount, and they talk about, I know Tom Kenyon and Judy, they work with it in the Magdalene manuscript, how, you know, Magdalene said that when he preached that day and when he taught, she said his Merkaba just filled the hillside. It was so big. And I know when I go there and I interact with the natural forces, that's what I feel. And it's really fun. It's interesting, and it's fun, you know, to watch people expand like that, because we've had so much conditioning that has made us small. And then we feel big again. You know what I mean? Energetically feel big, feel expansive. And there's so much room there because it's, you know, it's wide open, and it's so much natural beauty to just become, like you were saying, just open like a flower and bloom. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden we become really big.
But tell me about, again, going back to the megalithic astronomy, if you had a helicopter and were able to view these certain points, is there a certain configuration that you're aware of?
Oh, God, yeah. There are two, and I'm trying to put this together because there's an underlying esoteric knowledge here of how the five-pointed star interacts with the six-pointed star, if you will. But there is very clearly a set of mountaintops and or structures that exist in the landscape, with Redland Chateau, of course, being a part of them, which are the five-pointed star and the six-pointed star. There are a lot of very interesting angles. One of the most interesting books out there, it's a hard read, but it's interesting, is Henry Lincoln's The Holy Place, which he really is proud of that work. And so you see it on the landscape. You see it, like, okay, let's try to make this real when you're on the ground. You're leaving Rennes Le Chateau. One thing I do a lot when I'm there is Henry Lincoln comes up and spends time in the garden, but he'll always spend time with our groups, and I really enjoy his company, you know, Henry Lincoln, Holy Blood, Holy Grail, and other books that he's written. And the man is a legend. I mean, he's in his early 80s, and he lives in the area. He's been there for over 40 years. So a lot of times, and he doesn't really drive anymore, so I'll take him home. So when we leave and we go down the hill, the spiraling hill of Rennes-le-Château, we drive through the Valley of God, and of course he points everything out because he's so thrilled with, you know, his knowledge of how the landscape, you know, matches up. And we go right, we drive right into the center of a five-pointed star geographically. And we follow these markings until I drop them off at home. And of course, you know, I've been there enough now where I know when I'm in those energies, you know, in and out of those energies on the earth. And so, yeah, you can definitely make that one out fairly easily.
And one of the points on this five-pointed star is that standing stone. Is that what you called it? That
that would it be? God, it's been a while. Let's see. We know La Pique is the center. We have Bézu. We have Rennes-le-Château. I think we have Château Blanchefort. I'd have to have it in front of me because there's so many different alignments I studied. But basically in the landscape, you know, they're either marked with you can look and see a mountain, or you can see the ruins of a Templar castle on top of a stone outcropping, not quite a mountain, much bigger than a hill. So there are geographical landmarks which denote all of this. And Henry, of course, usually has his map out with all different markings as well. So you can drive to a lot of these different places, but I think it takes a little bit of time to understand how that geometry really lives in the landscape.
Mm-hmm. It also brings in
an interesting connection to Venus, which Henry Lincoln himself believes that the reason, because Venus mirrors itself alongside of Wren in the landscape, that five-pointed star, if you will, that he believes that that's why the Church of Mary Magdalene was consecrated to her, you know, in, I think it was 1056 or, you know, somewhere around that time, because he said they would have recognized who she was in relation to that energy. Which I think is just an incredible statement.
Yeah, especially for, you know, I guess that was long enough ago that the living memory was maybe a little more intact, even though it was like 1,000 years after she was there. You know, the stories get handed down and handed down. But then, mm-hmm. you know, when you get to, you know, 2011, there's been, you know, big media and major religious distortions. And that's, I mean, to me, I think that's probably part of the mission of the Priory of Sion was to keep that, the purity there of the true story.
Yes, and I mean, at great peril, sometimes death in the past, always, always, always protecting the secrets. And then when it came to be the right time, this slow release of information, things that were encoded in art and encoded in other things, and even in music and so on, in literature, that slow release began to accelerate. And Rob writes a lot about that in his book, again, Inside the Priory of Sion by Robert Howells. He writes a lot about that, and he brings it right into the present day, which to me keeps the story very relevant because there are just such now components to it. When I've studied the Templars and when I've studied the esoteric, some esoteric information on Jesus and Mary Magdalene, one of the things that I find interesting is that there is always this hint in this suggestion that when Jesus and Mary walked the earth, that they knew how long it would take for the Christ consciousness, if we can use that term, to hit a certain vibration on planet Earth. And they knew it was going to be about this time. And even with the Templars, you have this suggestion that they built these structures in these temples, if you will, and they encoded these truths, but there was something very present day about how they understood how long it was going to take. So whether that's time travel, multidimensional reality, I don't know, but I find that fascinating that somehow it appears as if they knew.
Well, in my understanding, it goes back to the Pleiades, because, you know, when your lifespan is 1,000 or 2,000 years, it puts a different slant on things than we have here.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
it was planned for the emergence and rebalancing of the divine feminine,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, in the last 2,000 years or more, it's been a patriarchal society, and
mm-hmm.
and Mary Magdalene, in my opinion, is like the epitome of the oppressed woman who's been maligned by the, you know, organized religion, and not really, you know, far and wide knowledge. I mean, there are the inside societies that do know the truth, but far and wide, she just, to me, is the essence of what has happened to femininity in the last 2,000 years, just not being given respect for the power they really have, or being allowed to use it for the benefit of the planet, all those things. And so this revelation of the Mary Magdalene story is so intricately tied in to the return of the divine feminine energy, which is ushering in the new cycle starting in 2012.
Well, you know, there's a lot to be said for that, and I feel, of course, that's true as well. Let's take a real-world example that happened just in the last week. The Brits, in their laws of succession, royal succession, change, I don't know if you heard about this, they changed a 300-year-old law that basically says, let's say, if Will and Kate, because I think it's from Will and Kate forward, you know, Prince William and Kate Middleton, you know,
mm-hmm.
if they were to have a girl child, she could become queen. Her right of succession is not thwarted by male heirs. Now, to me, that makes a huge statement in the world. So the Queen of England, the mother, this reigning queen who's been in power for many, many years, goes to Australia to this women's summit, or this summit that the focus was on women. And not only was this rule changed in Britain unanimously, the Queen spoke out on a world stage and said, basically, and I'm paraphrasing, but you can find this in the press, that it was time for the potential of women and young girls to be set free, and that women had the power to change the world. And she made one other comment, and to me, that was an amazing statement by this incredibly archetypal figure on a global stage. You know, it may have less impact for us in America because we tend to have a little more freedom, you know, than other countries I've visited, but it was a beautiful and profound statement. And I think statements like that are very significant. And I said, wow, this is a shift. This is a change.
Oh yeah.
So when you talk about the divine feminine and the feminine, you know, we know the Dalai Lama has said women will change. Women will save this world. Basically, he's come out and said. And now we have the Queen saying women have the power to change the world. Not that we can't work with the male population. I don't mean it that way. All I mean, and as you were saying, the feminine must come in balance with the masculine, but we've needed a big dose of feminine for people to wake up. And Mary Magdalene and her story and her energies have really epitomized that journey.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I agree with you totally that the if you think of the pendulum swing, so to speak, it has been over on one side for so long that before it comes to rest in the center, it kind of does have to swing that far to the other side. You know, let mm-hmm. the women take the reins for a while. Let's get, you know, rid of the corruption and the that aggressive war vibe.
No, I am so ready for that war vibe to be over.
Right, I mean, you cannot solve things with sticks and rocks. But then after that, the pendulum will come back to the middle, to where there is total balance, because there is nothing more powerful than a perfectly balanced masculine and feminine. You know, it's the sacred fire, it's the sacred creative spin, and that's not to say that men aren't part of that. Men who have the feminine polarity in that they are nurturing and gentle and they don't believe in war, and, you know, men that are basically more evolved will be part of the reawakening of the divine feminine for the cavemen that are still out there that hit people over the head with sticks.
Well, I'll tell you, I've been doing circle work for years. I do what are called Magdalene circles, and I've been doing them for 4 or 5 years here in Connecticut. I mean, I do travel and I do them elsewhere, but these are ongoing circles that have been going on and on and on. And I have to tell you, in the last 6 months, there has been an influx of men. And it is so amazing to see. And I often say to the women at times that, you know, not a lot of men have showed up, but the men who have are extraordinary. And more and more, I see them from all walks of life, from, you know, Manhattan, Wall Street types to police officers and everything, every person in between. And I am totally amazed, and they're all coming in their own way. But it's really exciting to see, because last year, the year before, not many, you know, just not many. It's really exciting to see that, because we do, in the end, we need that balance, and we need it within ourselves as well.
That's right, because all one or all the other is problematic. So, you know, a woman that has the strength and a man that has the nurturing gentility, that's really the most powerful states, regardless of what your physical gender is.
Well, I honestly don't think we can go to the next level of human evolution until we go beyond duality thinking. And I think there's a tremendous surge in the desire to begin to take that leap on a lot of people's part. I see it in the readings that I'm doing and in the work that I'm doing. But we have to, you know, Jesus talked about that in one of the Nag Hammadi texts. I forget if it's the Gospel of Thomas or not. It may not be. It may be one of the others. But he talks about making, you know, this whole thing about making Mary Magdalene male, and then she can, you know, can go out in the world. But he talked about making the male disciples female. And he was working with that energy of taking those two pathways of energy, the male and female, you know, once they hit into the brain there and they really interact in that pineal gland, you know, we transcend that duality consciousness and we go into a new state of being. You know, that is the mystical marriage. And so we have to do that on an individual level as well. And that's where I see things going.
Absolutely. I agree with you completely. And it's a wonderful thing that we're all here now to witness this great balancing, cleansing, and upliftment of an entire civilization, and ultimately the preservation of the many spiritual, holy, sacred places on this planet. And we're going to, in just a few minutes here, we're going to open up for some questions. But if you would just, I know that you are kind of looking at next spring, late spring, to have two more trips next year, maybe mm-hmm. in the first third or the second third, the last third of the year, to go back
mm-hmm.
with another group.
Yeah, I've been talking to Renee about it. We're trying to get clear on the times. And the autumn time is extremely powerful in Rennes-le-Château for some reason. I think it's connected to Venus, but it's this autumn equinox. And, you know, yet we were there in October. We had just gorgeous weather, and the energy was amazing. But I'm really very interested, and I want to work with you and Lavendar on the June alignments, which isn't a time I'm normally there because it's a little more crowded. I like it a little bit, you know, a little less people, but it may, you know, it may just have to be what it is, because these alignments with the Venus transit concluding this coming year in 2012, it may just have to be. So, you know, I definitely want to work with you. I need, you know, probably another week or two just to be clear on what it is that I'm putting together, and then see what comes up in the astrology.
Yeah, well, I know, speaking for myself, I would be happy to help you with that, and I'm quite sure that Lavendar would as well. Before I start taking some questions, Sierra and Lavendar, if you have anything to interject at this point. And I'm also going to try to check in with the chat room. As I said earlier, that Purple Sage was needed elsewhere tonight. So I've been trying to keep an eye on both, and I don't think I'm doing the chat room quite right. But if you do have a question in the chat room, if you just use all caps so it stands out, because I'll only have a second to look over and look back, we'll pick up any questions you might have for Gloria. And the time we have left, Sierra and or Lavendar, your mics are open if you ever you want to jump in, add something before we move on.
Yes, this is Lavendar, and I would like to say what a wonderful presentation this has been. This has just been awesome, and I just can't wait to take that trip with you, Gloria. I'm just planning on it.
Oh, thank you.
So
thank
I would
you.
Like to add that the August 15th date that you gave, you know, when I was a little girl living on the farm, I started carving August 15th in the trees and inside the house, and my parents got very upset with me, you know, saying that I was totally obsessed with this date. You know, for a long time I thought, well, maybe this is when I'm going to get married, maybe this, and I looked at this date for a very long time, and then when I went to Florida and met Ariel, and the Athena and the 96 material was given to me, it was given to me on August 15th. So I just wanted to bring
God.
That up.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Oh, that's just yet one more spoke in the wheel. You know, the whole thing is connected like a wheel with many spokes, bringing all this into one center pinnacle. And
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
This is Sierra, and I would like to speak to Gloria for a moment. I just really, really have enjoyed this presentation today. And, you know, as Ariel said earlier, quoted by Lavendar, truth knows its own source, I too sat erect when you said that, you know, Magdalene said, you know, this is from where I ascended. And I have a deep, deep connection to the Mary Magdalene story. And I just sort of, like, had my little mini grieving each time I knew you all were going on these trips, because I haven't been able to make it yet. But that is my hope one day, is to be able to be on one of these trips. As I said,
okay.
It's a very deep connection to the Magdalene bloodline and story I have. And so,
yeah,
when
you were saying that, I have to tell you, I was getting chills all over. I was just, you know, it's a strong feeling.
Yes, I just, deep, deep connection. And it just runs so personal. I think everyone that has a connection to the Magdalene story has such a deep personal connection in their way. But the thing that you were talking about the Queen of England going to the summit, and I'm actually a part of the 5th Women's World Conference Summit, and Dr. Jean Chenault Bolin has organized these women's summits. And what we're pushing for is actually to have a 5th Women's World Conference, which this conference addresses the United Nations. And the message is just basically what the Queen of England came forward and said, was that women are the ones to save the world, and it's through the balance of the both and so on and so forth. But Dr. Jean Chenault Bolin writes a book called Gather the Women, Save the World, and
mm-hmm.
It by no means is any kind of man-hater type of a thing. It's just a real call to women to stand up in their communities and to stand up in the world and to actually be the change that we know we need here now. So that also rang very true with what you were talking about, because I get the emails constantly from that group as to what's happening and how close we are to actually having that happen and how big of a deal it will be. And I'm sure, I actually didn't hear about what the Queen did, but that is just absolutely amazing. That's such a huge
step. Oh, it is
amazing.
She's actually
blazing the way for all of this to happen. You know, with, you know, Africa having the first woman, you know, president within the last couple of years, it's just slowly but surely this momentum is starting to gain and the Magdalen influence is coming in stronger and stronger, and it's just, oh, it just lights my heart, you know.
Well, you know, I think
it.
I get such a strong feeling about that. And, you know, when I read the Queen's comments, I'm like, finally, you know, a person in authority, instead of her, I mean, she's very reserved by nature, and the British way can be very reserved, but finally she made some bold statements, because that is what we need. And I'm just, you know, I'm just so blown away that she said some of the things she did about we are, you know, we are here and we have untapped potential, and it's time for that potential to be set free. I see that. I see that in our journey, and I don't. I think it's really a human. You know, I think it's time for humans to really tap into that potential. And to me, that potential, really in its core truth, is spirituality. It just feels that way to me. And whether women take the lead because it's a little easier for us, maybe, you know, the way our brain circuitry is, whatever it is, we have to be ready to say yes. And I know with my, and I'd like to say this to your audience, because I know that people have experienced this as well. When the Magdalen came knocking on my door, she said, take this journey. I will bring you to places you never dreamed of. And boy, was she right. And when I worked with Tom Kenyon, he said, the Magdalen is an impeccable energy. I've never experienced anything like that, but she will challenge you. And me personally, I have been challenged beyond belief in my journey to do the things that I've done. But I would never change a thing, because as an energy, as a frequency, as an avatar, as a presence from the spirit realm, however we see that, she is really knocking on our doors, and she's saying, be bold and believe. And it's challenging, I think, everything we all have, because we're in this world. And we have to figure our way. But I think we're closer than we've ever been. And that's why I just continue to meet with groups in her name. And, you know, some people will say, well, don't you think, you know, we should change the name? This is finished. I'm like, no, we're not there yet. You know, in her name, it's her energy, it's her presence. And she's guiding us. It's just very exciting. It's been challenging as well. But I think the more of us who just say yes, we're going to say yes, and we'll see where that goes.
Well, thank you for continuing to meet each challenge with the brave, you know, heart that you are, and doing the work that you're doing is very important, and I look forward to meeting you one day. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, thanks, Sierra. You know, we have while you were chatting, looked over, and I saw a note from someone in the chat room that says that as far as the Queen is concerned, they say that Kate is already pregnant with a girl. Has anyone heard that?
Oh, wow.
But that would
I have not heard that.
Okay. Well, that's just one of our chat room members saw that, and she says she saw that message as well, and they say that Kate's already pregnant with a girl, which would not be surprising, because I would think the whole English monarchy has of so much Pleiadian influence, and you know, and Diana was certainly Pleiadian, so it just stands to reason. We do have a couple of callers with questions, and we only have about 20 minutes left, so we're going to try to answer as many questions as we can before we have to say goodbye. But I have just loved this presentation, because it's just brought us all a little closer to the Magdalen energy, and seeing through your eyes those experiences and that energy, it's just really been very, very much appreciated. I'm speaking for the whole audience, I'm sure.
Thank you.
So we are first going to talk to, and oddly enough, both the callers that I'm going to bring on one at a time, they're both men. We're going to hear from Ralph first, one of our wonderful male energies. Hello, Ralph, you're on the air.
This is Caveman Ralph.
Okay.
I just love that image that you painted. Thank you very much. Hey, but always know the cavemen can ascend also, okay?
No, I was making it. I was making a differentiation between the cavemen and men like you.
Yes.
You know?
Thanks for making that distinction.
Yes, there is. Well, I was making that distinction. There are men like you, Ralph, that do carry the combined energies and you're not one of the cavemen.
Okay, well, that's nice to know. Gloria, that's a great presentation. I had just a couple quick questions, if you don't mind.
Sure, yeah.
There's supposedly some gospel, according to Mary Magdalene.
Yes.
Someone discovered those?
Yes.
Okay, so those exist? Those are...
They do exist. I don't know if they're in the Nag Hammadi collection. I don't have my books with me. But if you Google Gospel of Mary Magdalene, it is not a gospel that was written by her, to my understanding, but inspired by her. So,
oh, okay.
You know, yeah, so believe me, I would love to say, oh, we have this manuscript in her words, because I feel like the resonance of it, we would just know. So it's more inspired by her, and you can find books that cover that. There's some interesting stuff in there.
Oh, okay, great. I'll definitely check into that. Are you familiar with Kathleen McGowan, who wrote The Expected
One? A little bit, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, couple. I think in her book, the information in there in the Da Vinci Code and some of the things that you espouse are very similar. However, I have one statement to make about the Queen of England.
Yes.
And I do believe that just because you're female doesn't mean that you harbor the feminine energy. And I think
I agree with that.
The Queen... I mean, until she has come forth lately, was not harboring the feminine energy, and in fact was part of the dark side. However, I do believe she's had a change because of the changes that have come about, and I don't think that we should ever get confused that, you know, because we're, you know, male or female or what have you, that the energy follows the your sexuality. But,
well, I agree with that. I worked with some very high-profile attorneys when I worked in the legal profession for a very long time, and some of the toughest attorneys, female attorneys that I worked with, were very masculine. And I guess that's the way that they had to work, or felt they had to work through the system to achieve their success, and they were highly successful. So I agree with you. I mean, I think for Western women, we've missed the piece of our own femininity. And in order to survive in the world, we had to put on a masculine face in a lot of ways. And that was pretty hard, you know, because you're in a feminine body and you're conforming in a masculine way. I know I experienced that. And it wasn't until I really came in contact with the Magdalene energies in 2000, when she came into my life in a very big way, that I began to go deeper into my own femininity and realize that vulnerability, what, you know, didn't mean weakness. And I had my own journey with that, to begin to take on more feminine energy and not feel vulnerable in the world. So, I mean, I understand what you're saying, and I think as much as guys are trying to open up to it, I think we as women in some ways have had to open up to a deeper understanding of our own intuitive self, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well said. Yeah, I agree. And just one last question. You said that there was a place in France that you went and Mary Magdalene spoke to you and said that this is the place where she ascended?
Yeah.
Can you? Okay. Does that mean? Okay. Where did she go? What does that mean in terms of what did she go to? What dimension did she go to?
Question. I mean, some people believe that she went to Venus, where ascended masters go. I've read that. I don't know. I believe that when she showed herself to me in that moment and said that she ascended, it was more about what a bright and blazing star she became. It was light that I saw. And there is this apocryphal text called the Acts of Philip, which tells this amazing story, and it connects to that. That's why I'm going to tell it briefly, where Miriam, and this Miriam is Magdalene, is out trying to awaken people in the countryside, and she's with, I think, Philip and Bartholomew. And she goes out, and they come across this village, if you will, and it's occupied by the Romans, and the Roman in charge, the head guy, I forget his title, his wife comes and listens to the three of them, and she feels like she has an awakening or a healing. And so the Roman authority, that person, I don't know if he was a centurion, a military guy or what, he gets suspicious, so he locks up all three of them into jail. He says, you're going in jail. And when he does that, they then take them out because, you know, they thought they were sorcerers or witches in some way. They strip one naked. They hang the other by upside down, I think by his hair, some crazy thing. And when they get to the Magdalene, this is what this Acts of Philip says. She becomes like an arc of glass full of light, and they were afraid. And they ran away. And I only say that because it's written in this Acts of Philip, and in the same token, when she appeared to me, and it was when I was on the top of Peshkadu, which is where some people believe Jesus and Mary Magdalene are or were buried there, in that right there or in that area, it was the light that she showed me. So where she went, I don't know, but I know that it was a process of incredible light.
Well, that's awesome. Okay, I'm going to sign off on that. Some other folks are waiting, but thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And this is former Caveman Ralph signing off. And I'd like to see you all, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ralph. You know we love you. Bye-bye. I know that statement is going to be coming back to me because I was only talking about the warmongers. Those are the cavemen,
yeah.
The warmongers. We don't have any warmongers in our audience. We are going to see Elaine. We're going to pick up and talk to Elaine here. Elaine, you are on the air.
Thank you.
Hey.
Hi, Gloria. I was just wondering if you had come across Claire Hartsong's books and what you thought about them.
I have.
They're channeled books. Yes.
Yeah, no, I have Anna, Grandmother of Jesus, which I just lent to someone to read because he was having...
Yes.
It was he was having these visions of Anna, and he didn't even know who Anna was. So, it's kind of funny. And he actually spent a lot of time in France too. It's just funny how these things happen. And he was deeply intrigued. So I hope it helps him. And then the second book, I think it was The Voice of the Magdalenes. Again, somebody gave me both of these books. Now, this is what I can say because I'm just going to be honest. Not everything can resonate with everyone. And while the books didn't necessarily resonate with me yet, I know many people, at least for the first one, Anna, Grandmother of Jesus, in which that book had a tremendous impact on a lot of people. So I think that's great. But I have to be honest that I have tried to sit down and read them, and for some reason I've been pulled in other directions. And
yeah,
I have
the second book is a little hard to read, in a way. And
some of the information didn't resonate, and so I just put it down and said, you know, I'll just keep it on my bookcase, and you know, maybe in another time I'll pick it up, and we'll go from there. But
okay.
But I think they've been great for people. And again, I think, you know, it's their pathway, and what resonates with one sometimes won't resonate with another. But
sure.
You know, I think Anna had a big impact on people.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely so. Well, thank you, Gloria.
Yep.
Well, thanks, Elaine. And I think that you are in touch with your own inner guidance. And, you know, you just follow that, because if it's not time or if it's not for you, then, you know, go with what feels right, and you'll be,
oh, absolutely.
You'll be well on the path there.
Yes.
But thank you so much.
And, you know, sometimes, you know, I find that I may not be attracted to a book. I buy them when I know I need to have them, you know, but I may not read it for 2 or 3 years.
Right. No, it's so true. It's just timing.
Okay. Well, thanks again, Elaine, for calling in with your question. And we have one more caller that I'm going to move on to now. So I'll say goodbye to you and thank you so much. We have our friend Joseph. Hello, Joseph. You're on the air.
Hello, my beloved sisters.
Hello, sweetie.
What an extraordinary experience. These shows just steamrolling. The moment this show came on, I left my body. I could not sit up. I could not keep my eyes open. So I stretched out on the sofa and began to absorb the beauty that Gloria was bringing us. And I was there, although I've never been to Rennes-le-Château area, I was there during this whole program. And I must say, someone who is definitely certified, perfectly balanced male and female, and that showed up in my chart that Levendar did for me. I understand that, and my heart has cried out to my brothers and sisters for so long, saying, please come know the peace that I find in my heart by being perfectly balanced, androgynous being. And I can't tell you how deeply this has affected me and anyone who's heard this, because somewhere that part of themselves has been activated.
Wow.
The God, Mary Magdalene, just wept through the whole thing, because it's extraordinary what an incredible being she was. When they talk about her teachings, it was like she had such knowledge that she was trying to impart, and it was so hard for the men to listen to her. And it was like she was trying to teach them some kind of advanced physics, and they weren't ready to hear it yet. But it's just so exciting. Sorry, I'm in ecstasy from this. I'm just, tears are rolling down my face.
Oh, and wow.
All of the women that you're with so much, we've been together last July down in Albuquerque, and it was such an extraordinary experience being with them. And I love my sister Sierra. We have such a connection there with this balance of the male and the female. Oh, how can I say?
I love you too.
That's awesome.
You, and I am hugging all of you. Anyway,
you know, it's interesting you say that, because in Rob Howell's book, which I've mentioned, you know, 3 times now, Inside the Priory of Zion, when he talks, there's this point where they talk about Mary Magdalene in the book, and they said that in her teaching, she was teaching through ritual and oral tradition, because these teachings were so powerful, basically they had the effect on people to activate them. So what you were saying is what the priory believes is how the Magdalene taught, and I believe, of course, how Jesus taught through this oral. It's this oral transmission that I believe uses breath in some way that awakens, and that is noted by the Priory. And it's just funny because you said that too, and I just thought that was very interesting.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more with the author of the book. I know in this lifetime I'm an opera singer. And when I get up to perform, I can feel that energy coming all the way up my body and coming out through my heart. And I have people walking up to me in tears saying, I don't know what happened, but the moment you opened your mouth, my heart flung open and I began to cry. And
there you go.
They are working through me. There's no question.
Mm-hmm.
I know Claire Hartsong well. I've known her for years. She's a beloved sister of mine. And we discussed a lot of the things she's written. And I love her because she has incredible integrity. And it to her total proof. And I can see what she's trying to bring forth. I've gone round and round with Tom Kenyon, and we won't talk about that. But anyway, it's been an interesting experience meeting all these people. A lot of these teachers, people meet me and they don't know what to think of me. I have people say to me, well, are you gay? And I use the Boy George expression. Well, I try to be happy most of the time. They proceed and say, well, then are you bisexual? And I look at them and I said, you mean I only have two choices? That's the way my heart operates. Just recently, I'd gone through this experience of being very alone and not having anyone to share my life with. And I went to bed, I said, is there someone for me to share my life with, for someone for me to love? And this voice resonated inside of my head, we have given you everyone to love.
What a great answer.
Yeah.
Well, it was an extraordinary experience because all of a sudden I realized, yes, I mean, there's no limitation. You know, I was married for a while. I had children. I've tried every pathway, and none of them are exclusive. That's the thing I understand.
Well, I think in this, as I was saying earlier, and especially I have found for me personally and for others who I've brought to the Rinla Chateau region, when your spirit gets that big, whether it's light body, Merkaba, whatever the words are, and you feel that tremendous sense of our capacity, our spiritual legacy, our heritage, it's just amazing that we can be that large and that incredible and all-encompassing in life. So you know what I mean? As opposed to then having to shrink and conform to something very small. Why do we need to do that? You know what I mean? We have unlimited. That's why I mentioned the Queen's comments, because when she said women and young girls have untapped potential, to me, I was seeing that in a certain way, and to me, it felt like spiritually. You know, that's the underpinning of it all.
Yes, yes. And Kathleen McGowan, oh, I love her books. Lavendar put me onto those, the first ones of the Magdalene lineage, and now she's starting a new one, and she's starting with Anne Boleyn, who was the mother of Queen Elizabeth I. And I can't wait where she's going with these books, because it's there, it's encoded in the royal family.
Uh-huh. Well, some people believe Queen Elizabeth I was bloodline, and you know there's a whole story about that. But you know there are some people that believe that Francis Bacon was her illegitimate son, aka Shakespeare. But again, a whole other story for a whole other time.
Absolutely. Since we only have 90 seconds left here, Joseph, I'm going to thank you. Yeah, I'm going to thank you so much for calling, Joseph, and I know that we'll talk to you again soon.
Okay, you're welcome.
Okay, thank you so much.
Joseph.
Bye-bye. Well, Gloria, I can't tell you how much we have appreciated your joining us and your words and the energy that you've brought to this program will be affecting people from now in perpetuity as they listen in the archives, which I know they will. And Also, thanks to Renee for stopping by in the beginning of the show. Thank you to Sierra and Lavendar Purple. I know you'll be back next week. And
thank you so much for having me.
You are so welcome, Gloria.
This subject is just, it's a joy.
And it's huge. I think we might have a Rennes Le Chateau part two in the near future, and I'm sure that we'll give you a call. Thank
all
you
right,
so
okay.
much.
You're
thanks,
welcome.
Everyone, for listening. And we'll be back next week, Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern time. And we do invite you to join our forum and join us again next week. Bye-bye, everybody. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.